Yes, sir.
Good afternoon. Call the House Committee on Transportation and Economic Development to order.
Like $3.
We have but one thing on our agenda today, but it's an important thing. And with that, we'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2960. Representative Bailey, Representative Smith, if you want to get us started. I think Senator Edwards is on his way, perhaps, but you could get us started. And Zach, can you give us a quick summary, please?
House Bill 2960 establishes the Jobs, Energy, and Schools Fund. It requires the Department to establish a grant loan program to support certain initiatives.
Thanks very much. Welcome, Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Co-Chair Reed, Co-Chair Benz, and members of the Transportation and Economic Development Committee. It's exciting to be before you today to talk about House Bill 2960 with one of the co-chief sponsors here, a member of your committee, Representative Smith. And what we want to do is briefly frame the outline of where we're going with this bill, talk to you a little bit about the intent behind it and the opportunity here, and then you'll hear hopefully from a number of stakeholders about the direction of the bill and why they think this is going to be good for Oregon. I'm starting off, and actually I believe I did not identify myself, Mr. Co-Chair. I am Jules Bailey. I have the honor of representing House District 42. And I'm also wearing today my green apple. I've been privileged to be part of the National Green Schools Caucus, and we are here in Oregon joining in with states across the nation that are realizing that healthy, high-performance schools really do mean healthy, high-performance kids, and that they're a great way to create jobs. And I actually would have also worn my jobs lapel pin with this bill, but I figured with that many buttons, I might look like the representative from TGI Fridays, so I decided not to do that. House Bill 2960, you have a description in front of you that says Summary of Amendment to House Bill 2960. The bill as you see it before you now is a shell for amendments to come. And it's our intention, we are working very closely with school districts, with stakeholders, with contractors, with folks in the labor community to ensure that we're designing a bill that is going to work, to be effective, and to work within the difficult budget constraints, obviously, that the state and school districts are facing. And I want to go over just a little bit with you the intention behind the amendment that's currently in drafting and should be ready for you shortly. Essentially, the idea is that the great thing about energy efficiency is that it pays for itself. An investment in energy efficiency is exactly that. It's an investment that returns a value over the long run, and the ability to take that value and to use it to do the kinds of upgrades that are necessary to school facilities is really at the heart of this bill. We are looking at a combination of zero interest loans and grants to school districts that come from existing sources and from existing programs and revenues that we can recombine and package together so that we're able to provide a way to get the upfront capital necessary for these school districts to make the investment without burdening their bottom line or without costing taxpayers any additional dollars. And the result of that kind of program is an intention to, across the state, retrofit these schools, upgrade them, not only for energy efficiency, but also for health and safety, and to make it a better learning environment and a better teaching environment, while at the same time creating jobs and providing opportunities like biomass boilers that have worked very well in school districts like Enterprise, Oregon, and have shown to reduce costs as well as support the local economy and rural communities. The summary in front of you is a starting point. We recognize that there will be significant discussion going forward of exactly how to get this right, but we have a pretty good idea of where we're headed today, and we're excited to be able to present the concept to you. And with that, I have to apologize in advance. I am in another committee and testifying in yet another committee on another bill, so I will have to leave very shortly. But I'm sure that Representative Smith can answer any questions, or you can always ask Representative Lindsay, because everybody mistakes us for each other anyway. So
I'm impressed, sure, Representative Bailey, that you can be in three places simultaneously.
We'll see, Mr. Chair. That's called good staffing.
Yes, indeed. And we'll save all our difficult questions for you. Thanks.
Thank you.
Representative Smith?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I'll say only be very, very brief, and I think it might be helpful for me to stick around and maybe go towards the end after we've heard from some of the stakeholders. I just want to thank Representative Bailey. I think there's a lot of potential advantages from doing this, but beyond that, why don't I hold off testimony until we've heard from other people and I can go towards the end. Is that all right?
Okay. We have a number of people who signed up, and it looks like there's not anyone who's more than 100 miles away, so we'll just proceed down the list in the order that people signed up, and I'll call people in trios since we have three chairs there. So that starts with Stan Danielson, John Endicott, and Tim Fruit, please. And since you're first to the chair, Mr. Endicott, you get to start.
Good afternoon. Thank you, co-chairs Reed and Benz and committee members, for listening to our testimony today. I'm John Endicott. I'm the business manager of Plumber Steamfitter Local 290. I'm also the president of the Oregon State Building and Construction Trades. We have a pilot program similar to this that we have started with the help of Senator Wyden. Senator Wyden was able to acquire $11 million to be noted for Portland Public Schools to replace boilers, insulation, leaky water pipes, and fixtures. We've had dozens of members working on that since last June. They worked on it all through the summer and now are working swing shifts in the evening. And the faster they get things fixed, the faster the school district enjoys energy savings. Just a little tidbit, the Portland Public Schools has boilers that were removed from Liberty ships during World War II that were dismantled and are now part of their heating system. So you can imagine they're very inefficient. They are pollutants compared to the high-efficiency boilers of today. And to me, for stimulus and for work for our members, we hear unemployment rates of 12%, 13%, 14%. Well, in the construction industry, we're talking 40% and above. Our members have been out of work for 2 years. We're well, highly trained and skilled and standing on the sidelines ready for projects just like this to get going. We're ready to go June 15th and help get our folks to work, help the districts and public buildings enjoy energy savings, and makes a nice little circle. It works all the way around. That's my testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Please go ahead.
Chair Reed, Chair Benz, members of the committee, my name is Tim Frew, and as business manager of the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local Union 280, I represent nearly 1,200 highly skilled and trained inside limited energy and residential journeymen and apprentices that work for electrical contractors in the Mid-Willamette Valley in Central Oregon. As leaders in the electrical construction industry, we provide the following advantages to our customers: a drug-free workplace, a state-of-the-art training center, a code of excellence, journeymen and apprentices safety trained in NFPA 70E, OSHA 10, and OSHA 30, ongoing continuing education for all aspects of the electrical industry, and a guarantee the job will come in on time and under budget. Last year was one of the darkest years in the history of our local, where we experienced sustained unemployment of 50% or more. Though the economy has improved slightly, we still have high unemployment with 230 people on the out-of-work list, with nearly 50 people being unemployed for over a year or longer. Several Local 280 members have exhausted their unemployment benefits and no longer can afford health coverage. Last year, for example, I had a member that had not worked in over a year and had no health coverage. He was finally able to land a long-term job. He was on the job for approximately 6 weeks when he was diagnosed with kidney cancer. Due to long periods of unemployment, several Local 280 members have lost their homes. Like many of the unemployed, all my members want is the opportunity to work so that they can stay in their homes and provide for their family. This bill won't solve high unemployment in the electrical industry, but it will create jobs in the short term, and the state will see cost savings in the long term. On behalf of IBEW Local 280 members and the NECA contractors that employ them, I encourage you to pass House Bill 2960. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Perhaps we'll hear from the whole panel and then have questions. Go ahead, please.
Okay. Chair Reed, Chair Benz, is that correct? And members of the committee. My name is Stan Danielson. I represent contractors and workers in the insulation industry. I started in the trade in 1969 after finishing a four-year apprenticeship program. I've worked, obviously, close to 40 years in that industry. I'm here to speak in favor of House Bill 2960. I've passed out this that you can read at your leisure, but basically what this is all about, I've provided you with a brochure that's Technical Energy Solutions. and it speaks to the power of mechanical insulation. Conserving energy with insulation, I think most people know what insulation is. They think of wall insulation and so forth, but what we do is mechanical insulation, meaning I actually worked on this building here about 30 years ago and worked in the boiler rooms and getting all the pumps and even worked in these rooms here. But anyway, what we do is we do insulation on mechanical systems. Reducing energy costs with insulation, also with that is corrosion under insulation that's not properly insulated and maintained will cost in the long run. It's basically pay me now or pay me later. We go into buildings several times where the insulation hasn't been properly installed. It causes condensation between the insulation and the pipe, which corrodes the pipe, which again, you have to get in and replace that whole system. Reducing emissions. Reducing emissions consumption means less fossil fuel is being burned to produce energy. So obviously when pipes are insulated properly, the boilers, steam plants, and so forth, the less energy is being used, so there's less fossil fuels. Condensation control. Improperly insulated insulation can cause mold and mildew affecting indoor air quality. We're finding that more and more with chilled water systems and so forth that aren't properly insulated, causing mildew in buildings, affecting air quality in schools and other public buildings. Realizing a return and reducing life cycle costs. Equipment that is properly insulated runs more efficiently, has a longer life cycle, therefore reducing costs. So you're not in there replacing equipment constantly. If you look inside your brochure there, there is a State of Montana Mechanical Insulation Energy Appraisal. It's just a one sheet is all I provided for you this time. And basically, the appraisal was conducted on a variety of state facilities. 25 facilities were selected by the
state. That's good. Is that better?
Thank you. Okay, the appraisal was conducted on a variety of state facilities. 25 facilities were selected by the state. 56 mechanical rooms were visited. 3,500 items were identified. Estimated energy savings were approximately 6 billion BTUs per year, resulting in an overall payback period of 4.1 years with an annualized rate of return of 24%. So basically, we just looked at the fact that if you spend $100 on insulation, 4.1 years, you would get that money back in full, which would basically be a 24% return on your money. On the front of this brochure, it talks about typical rate of return is less than 6 months, and that's on uninsulated pipe. This talks about pipes that are insulated but without the right thicknesses or damaged insulation that you'll find in a lot of schools and so forth. So this speaks to no insulation. This speaks to insulation that's damaged and not properly done. There's a quick little brief thing that was put together by some of our members in Local 7, which is in Seattle, breakout a comparison of savings on a typical 3-inch steam line that was insulated. It talks about the amount of trees that aren't cut down, the amount of savings in gas, BTUs, and so forth. Currently, we're about 27% unemployed. The last 2 years has been very difficult for us. And even at 27% unemployment in our industry, that means that a lot of folks have had to travel. We've had guys in Alaska, Canada, working up at Moses Lake, Washington, down in Las Vegas. We've got a guy in Wisconsin right now. So we've got folks all over the state and even with all over the country. But even with that, we're running at about 27% unemployment. We have trained and skilled workers that have gone through a 4-year apprenticeship training program. So it's not a situation where you have to go out and train people to do mechanical insulation work. We have people, as John said, that are ready and available and trained to go to work. There are contractors also that can do energy audits. And in most cases, they're willing to do them for free. And we've worked out situations with our contractors to go and provide up to a $1,000 energy audit to go into buildings and show the actual cost of what it would cost to insulate it, how many dollars in savings in BTUs or whatever, and how long it would take to return that, get a return on your investment. In closing, basically, save energy, saves money, reduces emissions, and creates jobs. It's a win-win for everybody. And if you look on the back of this brochure, there's a couple of one on there as far as that 3E plus software, and it's got an address that you can check on that. You can do energy appraisals. There's also a resource that's called insulationleaders.com. All of that would provide a lot of information for you in regards to energy savings and so forth. So with that, I think that's it.
Thank you, Mr. Danielson. Are any of you interested in commenting on the substance of the bill, the specifics, or the amendment that has been alluded to?
The mechanics of the funding is kind of out of my realm.
Okay.
We're just here to tell you we have skilled trained workers, and it's great stimulus. It puts people to work who pay, you know, get family wages and pay family wage taxes back into the system that makes the whole thing loop again.
Absolutely. Thank you. Mr. Danielson, I meant to say something, too, about how until recently we would still all be the beneficiaries of your work in this building, but we're glad that there have been some upgrades since your last.
Yes, sir. I'm sure there has.
Any questions for this panel? Representative Lindsay.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Surely there's some energy incentives right now that are in place. I'm wondering if you can confirm that, number one. And then number two is, what sort of competitive bidding would there be should this bill pass, or what is already in place for competitive bidding?
As far as insulation contractors, signatory just to our local, there's 16 that work throughout the state. We cover the state of Oregon and 5 southwest counties of Washington. So, yeah, they are very competitive, probably more competitive than they should be at times, especially during these lean times. But, yes, there's, like I say, 16 signatory to us that work in this industry and do all facets of it, from industrial to chilled water to refrigeration to what we call commercial-type buildings like the Capitol.
And other incentives that might already be in place, energy incentives?
I think that I believe the Department of Energy still has some energy retrofit incentive funds available that they'd receive from the federal government. Where they are in expending those, I'm not quite sure. But the other on letting the work out, we think it would be very important that companies that work on those projects employ apprentices that are registered with the state of Oregon and have their apprenticeship requirements fulfilled, and minority requirements that we see on a lot of jobs that should be fulfilled to have other folks be able to enjoy in this work, and have some stipulations that really certify you've got skilled, trained workers doing this work.
Thanks. Maybe just a question to the chairs. I hope that we'll get a chance to hear from the Department of Energy specifically on current incentive programs and success of them.
Certainly, it's a good comment. We've had them. We've had some conversation with them, obviously, already, but we can certainly have them back. Appreciate that. Representative Sheehan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Of these 6 billion BTUs that are out there that can be eliminated, if you were to go to work on all those projects, how long would that keep the folks in your industry employed?
I'd have to say, when they looked at 25 different facilities, and I think it was 56 different mechanical rooms, I would say quite some time. I mean, it's a fair amount of work.
Can you quantify that for me? What quite some time?
I would say, you know, it depends on how much they did. If they went in and stripped a job, like right now, for example, we're doing a job at the University of Oregon in the steam plant. They made a decision, instead of updating all the equipment, they decided to re-insulate it. So they stripped everything there, and we're putting on 5 inches of calcium silicate, which is quite a lot. I haven't seen that much used in a steam plant in quite some time. We've got 4 guys working there, and they say they'll be there for about 7 months. There's tunnel work involved, and there's a mechanical room itself. In fact, I've even got pictures of it here, the job that they're working on. So that gives you some kind of a sense. It depends if they just go in and patch stuff and replace it, or if they made a decision to go in where it's got 1-inch wall insulation on the steam line, and they recommended 2 inches, so they went back and re-insulated everything over the top of it to save energy, then that would be obviously more man hours required than there would be if you just went in and patched and fixed things. But I would say that's a fair amount of work. And when I say a fair amount, like I say, just as an example, the steam plant at the University of Oregon, I'm going to say average 5 guys, 7 months. No, just on that one facility.
Chair Fall. Could you average that out over all of the programs, not just that one, but from the smallest to the largest? What are we looking at as a overall return on the workforce?
I would just say, like, if you took 56 mechanical rooms, and they're working in one mechanical room with 5 guys for 7 months, I would say that was probably an extreme. So if you just, say, took 56 mechanical rooms and averaged 3 guys for 4 months, if you did that math, that might give you a reasonably decent sense of what they were talking about.
Okay,
there.
Thank you. That's what
that gives you some sort of an idea.
And Mr. Danielson, I'll sure. take the liberty of suggesting that if you'd like to spend some time and figure out some more precise numbers or anything, not that there's anything wrong with a quick estimate there, we would probably all benefit from that
sure.
as well.
Thank you.
Jennifer, you wanted to follow up?
Yeah, Chair to Representative Sheehan, in our world, maybe this would help since we have experience with the Portland School District. There's 128 buildings in the Portland School District. There's varying degrees of work being done, of replacing oil-fired burners on the boilers to gas-fired, replacing leaky water pipes. They did a study. They were losing $970,000 a year just in water leaking from pipes and fixtures. So we have fixture replacement, leaky pipe replacement, energy fixes in the boiler room. And since the start of summer, we've had between 40 and 60 of our members working 40 hours a week through the summer, and like I said, after school started, they've just switched from a day shift to a night shift and continue on with those energy savings. So just with those 128 facilities, some large, some small, just the small fixes they're doing, that's a pretty good impact for us of workers.
And if I might, basically we follow their craft. So if they went and replaced, for example, he was talking about the Liberty Ship boilers, and they went in and replaced those boilers and found out that the piping systems in there or something were corroded and they also needed to be replaced. I mean, it's like once they get in there and get into it to find out how much work really needs to be done, as John said, it depends on the job, but when he goes in there, pretty much we follow him. Most everything that he's going to do in those schools is going to require re-insulation.
Very good. Other questions from the panel? I don't see any. Thank you, gentlemen, very much. I expect
Thank you.
We might have you back when we go a little further.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So we go slightly out of order because I've been advised that some people need to leave. So we'll call up Alex Banks, Stephen Kafouri, and John Mullis, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Mr. Co-Chair. My name is Stephen Kafouri. I appreciate the courtesy if you let me go on. I need to be another committee testifying as well. I'm here today representing Apollo Solutions Group, which is an energy services, ESCO, energy services company, which will be doing some of this work. And Alex Banks is with me to tell you more about what our company does and what's going to happen once this bill passes. And I might just say, Representative Lindsay, that there's a bill just came today from Senator Smith, came out printing, which I asked to have come to.
Representative Smith, we don't want to demote
different
him
guy.
Like that.
Yeah, different okay. guy.
Okay. This one over here.
Yes.
which I asked to have come to this committee at the chair's request, which will deal with this issue of process so that we can get these projects working more quickly, this election process. But that's another bill to come.
Chair Reed, Chair Benz, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak. As Stephen alluded to, my name is Alex Banks, and I'm the director of Apollo Solutions Group. Our company is an energy services company, as Stephen indicated. We specialize in the types of projects that this type of funding would facilitate. I've spent the last 17 years of my life trying to combine the technical solutions with the financial realities of improving facilities and finding ways to pay for them in a long-term, sustainable fashion. And when I say sustainable, I don't just mean from an environmental standpoint, but I mean from a financial standpoint. a social standpoint and an environmental standpoint. What this bill does is address one clear fact. We are spending the funds, we are spending the money today on energy in our facilities and our schools. We just are not spending it in an efficient manner. We're spending it on antiquated methodologies, bad systems. We're spending a lot of money making repairs on systems, duct taping them, patching them together, as opposed to addressing them in a holistic, long-term fashion. In our methodology, we guarantee the savings associated with the projects. So we provide a backstop and a risk-sharing approach to allow the school districts to leverage these grants, these loans, in order to make these improvements and then share the risk with the energy service company and the contractors to ensure that the desired outcome is met. If we tell them there's going to be a certain amount of savings, $100,000 in savings, we save $90,000, we write a check for $10,000. That's a nice backstop, and it also eliminates the risk to the state on the loans. This bill acts as a catalyst for the needed for the money that's needed in order to help us improve the efficiencies of the schools. Right now, if you look at the way that a methodology could be utilized and you use, say, a loan and a grant combination for the individual schools, we could leverage probably 2 to 4 times the size of a project, in which represents improvements, over the amount of the grant and the loan. So, for example, a $100,000 grant could leverage a $400,000 worth of improvements to the individual schools. So, point being is we're spending the money. Let's just spend it in an efficient and effective manner as we go forward instead of continuing to spend it in a haphazard manner, which has been the case.
I imagine we'll have some more questions for you in a minute, but just for my own curiosity, where's Apollo headquarters?
Tri-Cities, Kennewick, Washington is our headquarters. Our office is located in Portland.
Okay.
I live in Portland.
Thanks.
My kids go to Portland Public Schools.
Great. Just curious. Mr. Moss.
Excuse me, I'm the lead.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks,
Mr. Corey, for questions, if you wanted.
No, I think let's hear from you, and then we can ask questions.
Okay, very good. Chair Reed, Chair Bentz, members of the committee, my name is John Mullis. I'm representing the Oregon State Building and Construction Trades Council. I'd like to thank Representatives Bailey and Smith and Governor Kitzhaber and members of his staff that have worked very hard to bring this initiative forward. Everyone knows the construction industry has been devastated over the past 2 years. You just heard a couple of our industry reps testify to the effect that's had on our workforce, and I know there's some others in the room that we're probably going to hear from in a little bit. Pretty much at any point in time over the last 2 years, if you took any unemployment rate or underemployment rate and took it times three, that's where the building trades have been at. So if unemployment rate's is 12, we're about 36. And if underemployment is 22%, you know, folks that are working at a $20,000 job that used to have a $50,000 job or are working 24 hours a week instead of 40, if that's at 22%, we're about 66%. So this won't put everybody back to work, but it'll provide a lot of meaningful employment opportunities for a lot of people. Green jobs is a new and popular buzzword, and I just want to reassure everyone we have a workforce that's already trained in the highest fashion possible to take these jobs on. We have tens of millions of dollars invested in training centers around the state, and we spend millions of dollars every year in training our apprentices and doing journeyman upgrades to prepare them for these types of opportunities. So I would respectfully urge you to move House Bill 2960 forward, so that we can put some of our members back to work, but also because it's the right thing to do for the schools. Thank you very much, and if there's any questions, I do my best to answer them.
Thanks. Questions? Representative Lindsay?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. How many schools, do every single one of our schools, K through 12, have to be retrofitted, or what percentage of our schools? I'm assuming the newer schools are great, LEED certified, et cetera. What percentage of all of our schools need to be improved?
Chair Reed, Chair Bentz, Representative Lindsay. I think you already answered the question for me. Is that in the new buildings that have been built over the past 5 or 10 years, there shouldn't be need for any work. And even the older buildings, my guess is that some of them have had upgrades in the last 5 or 10 years and would need less attention than some of them that are 40, 50 years old that haven't had any upgrades at all. So I think it'd be important for an assessment to be done by the districts, building by building, to figure out which buildings need the most work, what's going to be the most cost-efficient way to spend the money, so that the money goes to the best use possible.
I'm going to interrupt the natural flow of questions for just a moment because we've been joined by the Senate Majority Leader, so I know she has probably a very tight schedule. So, Senator Rosemont, if you'd like to let us know what we should know, we're glad to hear it.
Excuse me, gentlemen. Good afternoon, Mr. Co-Chairs and Mr. and Madam Co-Vice Chairs and members of the committee. I'm Diane Rosenbaum from Senate District 21. Just wanted to join you very briefly as a chief sponsor of House Bill 2960 to thank you very much for considering this bill today. I know that this won't be the last time that you're talking about it, but this bill, which has been called a lot of different things and probably will be before you're through with it, I think can be called three things. It can be called a bill that's good for our jobs and the economy. It will create jobs statewide. It's going to be good for our kids because it will help them learn better by keeping them warm in the summer. And it will be good ultimately for taxpayers and the state of Oregon because it will do both of those things while saving money on energy costs. So sort of hard to think how there could be anything wrong with a bill that does all of those things, though I'm well aware that there are a lot of complexities to be addressed in this bill. I know that this committee is fully capable of working through those issues, and so just wanted to tell you, go to it, do well, and we are very much looking forward to seeing this bill over in the Senate. So thank you for interrupting your witnesses and allowing me to testify.
Thank you, Madam Leader. It's always reassuring when we hear from the Senate that they're interested in seeing something that the House might see. We appreciate that direct message from you.
Anytime. Thank you.
Appreciate that. Thanks, Senator. And now we're back to our regularly scheduled program. Representative Lindsay, did you have any follow-ups to that? Okay. I saw Representative Widener's hand and Representative Bentz, you as well. Okay, so Representative Widener, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The statement, and you guys might be able to do something with this, but we just passed a bill and went to the ballot, and it was Measure 68 that was supposed to be for weatherization of schools that the voters just enacted here not too long ago. I'm just wondering, has that helped you out at all, utilizing lottery funds for doing the very same thing that you're asking for?
Well, typically comprehensive programs that reduce the long-term cost of ownership and operations in the facilities draw from a number of funding sources. And given our cost of utilities here in the state, which is low relative to the rest of the country, every bit helps. So those lottery funds help. The incentives, which you asked about earlier, help. But if you look at us historically, they are not enough to allow the projects to stand on their own.
Representative Widener, maybe there's something I've forgotten, but my recollection, I was just looking to see if I had forgotten. It was about Measure 68 was about capital expenditures generally, right? Or was it specific?
Yeah. Well, it was for whether capital expenditures, it kind of encompassed everything.
Right. That'd be consistent with my understanding that yeah, weatherization could be part of that, but it wasn't specific to that.
Yes.
So I just
want
to make sure I was understanding.
It wasn't just specific. It engrossed everything. So.
Okay.
And that's why I was wondering, with them being in the trades, right, where the uptick should be coming from that.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Bentz?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I should have asked this question of Representative Bailey, but he zoomed out the door too quickly. So I'll ask the three of you, and it could be asked of anybody. And the question is, why schools? Because, of course, when one looks at how a dollar can be spent most efficiently in saving energy, it generally wouldn't be necessarily buildings. It generally would be conservation. And by that, I mean large conservation projects. I recently saw some numbers that would suggest that maybe schools wouldn't be the most efficient place we could spend our money. So I want to know, from you guys' standpoint, in fact, anybody that's going to testify, why schools in particular? I'm just guessing, just to add a little more to the question, the children in the schools are probably warm and dry. It's just that it's expensive to keep them that way. And so I don't think this is a matter of kids freezing out in burns, although this year would have been one year it might have happened. It's really a question of how do we best spend our money. So are you folks, everybody that's going to be in favor of this bill, ready to say this is the most efficient way to use what looks to be quite a bit of money and a lot of effort?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bence,
welcome
I think...
back. Thank you.
There are a lot of problems with schools because the schools have had financing locally, where other state agencies get their money from the central government here in Salem. That being said, I think there's also a political element here. Obviously, the governor ran on this issue. This is a way for something that people could understand. There's a problem with schools. Most people have kids in schools. It's a little more exciting than putting money into, say, the state corrections facility from a political viewpoint. But bottom line on this is there's an enormous amount that needs to be done all over the state with a lot of state agencies, with county facilities, city facilities, schools. I've been working with Apollo, and before then I worked for another company, working with agencies around the state. There's an enormous need, and this is only a small part of the need. But the good news here is that it can all be done for free. It all paid back, as Mr. Alex said just a minute, Mr. Banks. There's a guarantee, not just by our company, but by all these ESCOs, part of the state statutes, that the guarantee is that we promise that we will cover the costs, 100% of the costs, for the whole project. And if we fail, we'll write you a check for the difference. So the only problem is getting some money up front, some loan money, for so we can start paying it back. But the money, for the, it's something that we got to have a lot more broad than just the schools. You're absolutely right, Mr. Gauthier.
And Mr. Chair, I can when I go back, I can address that question and Rash on and Representative Lindsay's question too.
Do you have a follow-up, Representative Benz?
Well, as soon as here from okay. Mark.
Just a thought to share, Chair Reed, Chair Bence, and I'm not enough of an industry expert to say that if you replace a boiler in a school versus a boiler in another building, that my guess is the two would be relatively equal. And every school, I think, in every district is in different shape. You know, some have had upgrades and need repairs less than others. I was in a middle school in Southeast Portland not too long ago, and there was buckets in the hallways where they're collecting water from the leaky roof that's dripping through the ceiling tiles. So I think, again, you need to assess each building. I think it makes sense to start in the schools just because the funding situation for school districts is in such a difficult shape that if we can help the schools out and put folks back to work, to me it's just a logical place to start.
Lest you think that there is any lack of interest on the part of the Senate, our parade of senators continues. Mr. Kapoor, if you wouldn't mind vacating your seat again for a moment. Senator Edwards, glad you joined us. We know you have a busy schedule, so we'd love to bring you forward and get you on your way.
Well, thank you, Co-Chair Reed, and members of the committee. My testimony is going to be very brief. I simply wanted to come and provide you a little bit of perspective that I have on this concept. For the record, my name is Chris Edwards. I'm a state senator in North Eugene, West Eugene, and Junction City. My staff and myself have been working on this concept for several months. I must say it's actually been more my staff than me, but I very much am interested in advancing this concept through the legislature. And frankly, I think a lot of the work has come from members of this committee and other House members, but in the spirit of not only bipartisanship that seems to have risen to the top this legislative session, we're trying to give it the old bicameral shoulder to the wheel as well. So I'm here. I understand that perhaps Senator Rosenbaum was here earlier.
He was.
We tried to coordinate coming together at the same time, but our schedules didn't work so well. So I'm really here as not only one of the co-chief sponsors from the Senate side, but also a member of the Senate leadership team to commit to, or one of the Senate leadership teams, to wanting to advance this legislation through the Senate. And from my perspective, we're waiting. The sooner you get it to us, the sooner that we can get this thing going. So,
thank you, Senator Edwards. I told the Majority Leader that we especially appreciate it when the Senate indicates an interest in something the House might send them. So thanks for adding to that.
Oh.
And always smart to give your staff credit. Thank you for that, too. Any questions for Senator Edwards before we let him go? Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
So I think I had a list of people who were interested in asking questions of our other panel, and first on that list, provided you've got your follow-up.
Actually, I do have my follow-up ready.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair Reed. It's always challenging, particularly on a day when Stand for Children is in the building, to ask tough questions about what we're about. But this is a complex little exercise, particularly when someone says it's not going to cost us any money, that always raises one eyebrow just a little. And I've been working with Representative Bailey on this concept, not enough, but a little, to recognize just how challenging the money end of it truly is. And it doesn't suggest at this point that we should shift our focus to something else, but a good way of illustrating the challenges in the program is to ask the question that I've asked, which is why schools? And then we can get around the warm and fuzzy piece and immediately into the cost. And so I guess it'd be warm and cool, fuzzy piece in this instance. So I want to go back again. When you say it's free, that means, as I understand it, that our cost of power will be pushed down and the saving component will be used to retire that which we borrowed.
That's correct.
And that would mean the cost of the funds would be of paramount importance. So perhaps you could just talk about where the money's going to come from after we put up whatever it is to get this going, or is that premature for this panel?
Mr. Co-Chair, why don't you answer that?
Okay. Mr. Co-Chair, thank you. If I may, you've described it correctly in that the savings creates a delta between what we're currently spending and what is necessary to service the debt. Once the debt has been retired, then that savings continues to fall to the bottom line of the school district. So until that has happened, the money is secured through the delivery model in an energy savings performance contract.
If, Mr. Chair, if I may add on to that, there's another interesting thing factor that happens here. If we're going to make a guarantee that you're going to save X number of dollars over a period of time, and we're going to write you a check for the difference if we don't, then our estimates are going to be pretty conservative. And a matter of fact, in reality, our experience is that there's a 25% savings. So you're not just breaking even on this deal. You're actually cash ahead at the end of every year.
Since you brought that up, it brings a follow-up for me, which shouldn't be long to take away from the rest of the questions, but what's been your experience? How often have you had to write a check?
Very rarely. It's not good business practice.
If I may. Kidding,
if I may. If I were to give you a direct answer, less than 5% of projects. But at the end of the day, that risk is then borne by us.
I understand, and that's really the question. So less than 5% of the time over what span of time, or how many projects in rough terms?
In my 17 years, I've written one check.
And how many projects, though? 5% of 100 projects,
that's,
or 10,000?
That's probably been, in my experience, roughly 75.
Okay.
Projects.
One of 75. Thank you very much. Representative Lindsay?
Thanks. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Now that Mr. Kafour is back, you just stated that I previously asked your friends here that what percentage of schools need to be weatherized or retrofitted, and you just testified that there's tons, or that it's in dire straits. Can you give me a percentage of how many of our schools need to be weatherized?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Lindsay, yeah, I serve on the Portland School Board, and I can tell you that virtually every single school, maybe one or two exceptions in the Portland School District out of 128. Yeah, could use work. I'm sure that there are some suburban school districts in your district, for example, where that's not necessary. And I can't give you that number around the state. And let me tell you, there's enough work here to be done to keep these folks that it's talked working for years.
I know, Representative Lindsay, I know that I'd heard recently about, I think the numbers I remember, something like 600 of 800 school buildings had an audit done. I don't know the results or the contents of the audit, but at least that would be a source of some initial information. And I'm betting when we ask Representative Smith to come back, he'll have some information for us. So good questions, and hopefully we'll have an answer back. Do you have a follow-up?
And a follow-up, yeah, for you, sir. And that is, I understand right now that each school district, my school district, has a capital construction fund itself. I'm assuming that you've been competing for those dollars already. What's the outlook? If for some reason this doesn't go through, what's the outlook of competing for those dollars to do the exact same thing?
Well, Chair, Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Lindsay, those are typically two different funding sources. So we have the capital side and we have the operational side. Where we're funding these projects through is the savings on the operational side, the long-term operations or the energy savings themselves. Without that methodology, then we often experience the competition for capital that you were referencing and find that expansions as opposed to renovations or refinements of existing facilities often become priority. Or oftentimes you find that those capital budgets are put toward repairs that could in fact be addressed under this type of a program. And those capital funds, if they were not put toward the repairs, could be redirected into other areas that serve the school through providing additional spaces or rooms.
Okay. And one more final. I'm assuming these expansions are done properly when they are expanded.
One would like to assume so.
Okay.
You know, in terms of whether or not my children go to Llewellyn Elementary in Portland Public School Districts in Southeast Portland, and we see capital dollars spent on portable school buildings. In my line of business, what I'm trying to do is reduce the total cost of ownership or the life cycle costs for the districts. And that is not what I would consider to be the my favorite way to see money spent, because long term I don't necessarily know that's the best financial decision. That kind of ties, if I may, into a question you asked earlier about the number of jobs that this type of thing would create. And one thing I want to point out is that if we increase the efficiency and the reliability, which addresses something that Representative Benz mentioned earlier in terms of are the kids warm enough and cool enough as they are today. They may be, but the equipment, much of the equipment throughout our state is on the brink of failure. And when it fails, we make emergency repairs. And we don't necessarily replace it in a way that is the most efficient or is looking at the rest of the systems that it serves. We just simply go in and replace it very quickly, which is, again, a poor use of funds. When we direct our precious limited amount of funds to doing that type of thing, it creates more capital for the programs in the schools, and we find ourselves being unable to fund the music programs or fund the other teachers or the athletic programs that we want because we have this additional burden on the overall funding for the school. Doing something like this helps relieve that as well. It comes back to the jobs. It's not just the jobs that are created while we're doing this work, but it's also a preservation of jobs as the districts become more fiscally sound.
Thanks. Representative Widener.
Thank you, Chair. Just real quick, because we talked about all the positives and everything with this. If it's that good, how come you guys don't finance it yourselves?
There are certain situations, if I may, Rep. Widener. We do in certain cases, but it is not typically in our business model to actually fund a project for over a 10 to 15 year period of time. It is not in our cash flow model as a business, traditionally as a contractor. There are numerous third-party financers, as well as, for example, the state of Washington's treasurer office that does finance them, but also numerous third-party financers that do, in fact, specifically as it relates to this model where they know that things are guaranteed by an energy services company.
And in fact, Representative Widener, I think that might be the subject of one of the other bills that's in our committee or maybe headed our way as a related question. Representative Smith, I think you were seeking some...
No, I can wait.
Okay. Other questions? Representative Benz?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just so we don't leave this unanswered, because I think Representative Widener's question is a good one. The money comes, from your understanding, from what source and your model? Where are we going to see that money? Where is it going to come from? What's the source? If you're not putting it up, who is?
Representative Benz, as I alluded to earlier, it usually comes from a number of sources, various incentives, depending on where you are geographically, whether or not you'd be in the Energy Trust of Oregon regions or out with a PUD, so on and so forth, signatory to BPA. So that's usually one component of it. Other grants that are potentially available, as well as in certain cases it can come through tax-exempt municipal leases through a third party, or as a good model has been shown in the state of Washington, where it's put forward as a loan from the state treasurer under their local program. And that is kind of similar to what I believe we're talking about here. Otherwise, the district is required to fund it through capital, which we know is difficult to do. There are also, Senate Bill 1149 has also provided some funding in the past.
And that's mentioned in the description we have here about the amendment that's forthcoming that Representative Bailey's office distributed to us. Yeah, follow up, please.
Thank you. As I understand it, the public service charge, I hope I got that right, is going to be a source of some of these funds. And to me, that brings up the point again of our making a choice here to spend those limited resources for a purpose. Now, I could be wrong because I think a portion of it is allocated to the schools in any event. But the concept of a choice, that is, that we are going to allocate limited resources, which I think you said, to the schools, does place upon us, or you, those in favor of this bill, the burden of showing that this is the right thing to do for all the reasons you've been mentioning. And I'm looking forward to that and hearing about it, because I do think the concept of limited resources fits this situation as well as most. Now, that I just, so you know, I like the concept underlying this bill. I'm just very anxious about the details. So I'll be looking forward to hearing more about it. Thank you.
Thank you. I don't see any more questions for this panel. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
That brings us to William Myers, Brian Krieg, and Janet Gastelum, please.
Chair Bentz, members of the committee. My name is Jana Gastelum. I'm the Program Director for Global Warming at the Oregon Environmental Council, and I appreciate being able to testify today. The Oregon Environmental Council fully supports creating high-performance schools in Oregon. High-performance schools are energy efficient, they're water efficient, they operate well, and they're healthy work and learning spaces. They're also built to be sustainable and use low-impact materials and are centrally located so that people can easily walk and bike to them. But we know that not every school in Oregon is a high-performance school yet, and so it's great to create investment opportunities for our schools, and we fully support creating the Jobs, Energy, and Schools Fund to make these vital improvements in our schools. Energy efficiency creates these operational savings, which we've heard about a lot today, but I'll provide just a couple more facts. Utility bills are the second largest cost to schools and can increase up to 20% per biennium. Energy efficiency is also a great job creator. National statistics show that for every $1 million invested in energy efficiency projects, 15 jobs can be created, and that's more than for traditional industries like road construction, and about three times as many as are created in traditional energy industries like oil and gas development. We also think that equally as importantly, many energy efficiency upgrades can also create great health benefits in schools. And we think that selecting projects based on their health improvements, it should be a criteria for this program as well. So, for example, one of the things that you can do is clean heating coils, which is a classic deferred maintenance problem in a lot of our schools. Cleaning these coils makes the equipment operate more efficiently, it gives it longer longevity, and it also improves indoor air quality. quality. And this is important because school kids spend up to 50% of their time during the school year inside school buildings, and common indoor air contaminants can trigger things like asthma, which of all chronic diseases is the leading cause of school absenteeism. And unfortunately, Oregon has a higher than average burden of asthma. Nearly 10% of our adult population and over 8% of our child population have asthma in the state, and that costs us about $30 million a year in medical expenses. It's also about three times more expensive to provide health care to a child with asthma than one without. So if we can reduce these asthma triggers, as well as doing energy efficiency upgrades, we get not only the operational savings, but we get multiplier effects from health savings as well. And these have already been proven in high-performance schools. Ash Creek Intermediate School in Monmouth has a 15% reduction in absenteeism, and it was upgraded to be a greener, higher-performance school. And a 2005 Carnegie Mellon review found that asthma attacks decreased 40% in schools where indoor air quality was improved. High-performance schools also have lower rates of flu and colds, other respiratory illnesses. Kids grow better and faster. There's less fatigue and fewer teacher sick days. We also know that building schools to be high-performance schools from the ground up has great savings in the long run. A 2006 study, Greening America's Schools, which was partially commissioned by the American Federation of Teachers, found that sustainably built schools, the dollars saved from operational costs were enough to hire on a full-time, year-round teacher. We believe that this bill just really isn't necessarily about saving energy. It's about really re-energizing our schools and our economy, and the benefits of high-performance schools really go to our students, our teachers, our staff, and the workers in Oregon who deserve good-paying jobs and those opportunities as well. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Let's hear from the whole panel and then have questions.
Thank you, Chair Reed, Chair Bentz, and distinguished members of the committee. My name is William Myers, and I'm a business representative with the Sheet Metal Workers Local 16, representing about 1,200 members in the state of Oregon and Southwest Washington. Retrofitting our public schools will provide many benefits for Oregon. Besides the cost savings, they will also help provide stability for our industry. We can stabilize our training and apprenticeship programs and continue to train tomorrow's workforce. We have the folks ready now and today, and as you've heard already, that they're in the construction industry. We are facing very drastic unemployment rates. One of the things we'd like to see in this bill is that it isn't overcomplicated in the contracting process, so we can hit the ground running. And also that this is prevailing wage work, and we'd like to see that put into the bill. There's public funds being spent. And with that.
Thank you. That's great.
Chair Reed, Chair Bentz, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Brian Krieg. Today I'm here representing the Plumbing and Mechanical Contractors Association and the Sheet Metal and Air Conditioning Contractors Association here in Oregon. I've been working with the sponsors of the bill, Representative Bailey and Representative Smith, since the end of last session. We really started on this process. I've been helping them with the labor and contracting language throughout the process. In looking at the numerous things that this bill does in the way of satisfying policy issues and policy goals in this state, I've seen over my years here at the legislature very few bills that have as big a bang for the buck as this does. We start talking about dealing with hitting carbon reduction targets. We talk about better learning for students, and we know that we have issues with getting the kids, keeping them in the classroom, keeping them educated. Keeping them warm or cool so that they stay focused is an important thing. good wage jobs and long-term ones, and ones that are a wage that's high enough that they actually, the folks making it will be reinvesting right back into their own communities. And also then looking at the fact that we are tight on energy here in the state, and to bring in new businesses, they need to have good steady streams of energy available to them. By working with the schools, which collectively, I don't have the numbers for it, but it is a large amount of energy consumption here, and as you've heard earlier, it's the number two item at most of the schools for their cost. If we can lower that, that's going to take a, that's going to put a big chunk of energy back on the market that will be available for other growth here in the state. Do want to encourage you to look at the contractor language for this and hopefully keep it similar to last session's contractor labor language that we put into House Bill 2626, the East Bill. That required that we had safe, qualified contractors and a skilled workforce to make sure the job was done right. I think that those, with a little bit of tweaking that language, can be very useful for this bill also and have some consistency out there. With that said, I'd say that our contractors are ready to go. They have the skill sets necessary. We're constantly training and revising our national manuals and training programs in these areas. Green energy, green jobs. It isn't something that happened overnight. This has been evolving for a long, long time, and our people have been keeping up with it. We have a trained workforce, labor force that's ready to go, and they're very eager to get the work. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Questions?
Just the movement of your hands, okay.
Raising my hands.
In anticipation, I'm sure.
There's two hands.
There we go. Representative Lindsay.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. If no one else is going to ask
the
question,
yeah.
I'll continue.
Okay.
So, and this is a question for Ms. Gastelum. Thank you for being here today. I would love to see every single school, K through 12, and all higher ed, every single building retrofitted and B LEED certified, etc. We are in a this legislative assembly is going to be debating the difference between needs and wants and good, better, best. My question for you, and it'll be a follow-up for the two of you as well, is what is a higher priority, expansion of schools or retrofitting the schools? What is a higher priority for us to consider?
Co-chairs, Representative Lindsay, I think that is a big question for policymakers to decide upon as well. I think it's maybe somewhat a false choice, though, when we're talking about the health and safety and well-being of our kids. We do need to figure out how to make sure that existing spaces are as healthy and as efficient as possible, but we also need to make sure that there are adequate resources for all of our kids that are out there. So I understand it's a big question, but I think that there are some spaces that simply can't be ignored, and they will need to be addressed as quickly as possible. And in some cases, expansion may be possible as well.
I'd like to touch on one thing real quick. As our technology gets better and better, our efficiencies get better in the products that we install. It's similar to like a Dell computer. I'm looking just to grab one. She's not using a Commodore 64. She's using a Dell computer because it's more efficient and she can get things done quicker. The same thing goes with the technology of the heating, ventilation, air conditioning that goes into these schools. We need to keep them upgraded so they're more efficient and more to date. I mean, it's not a, you wouldn't even question it, upgrading your phone. You need to upgrade your HVAC system as well. So, I mean, that's how to save money.
Chair Reed, Representative Lindsay, I think one of the issues here that is being looked at is where the funding sources are coming would come for from this. I, of course, would defer to Representative Bailey for his extreme knowledge and creativity in this particular area, but I know that they've been looking at the 1149 types of funds that are out there that are not dedicated. They can't be used for schools for capital construction or classroom issues, but they could be. Some of the money can be used for energy retrofit type of work. Work, weatherization type of work. There's a number of those types of streams, I believe.
May I say for a second there, I have some understanding of that, but in case others on the committee, some, I'm looking at Representative Lindsay with no pejorative intent, but if you don't know what 1149 is, perhaps, and even for the benefit of the audience, just a brief description of that history. or I can try it if you want.
Chair Reed, I might defer to you on that one.
It's a little dangerous for me, too, but essentially that was the bill several sessions ago that established the Energy Trust of Oregon and the public purpose charge, a portion of the dollars from which were dedicated to operations for schools. That's the very short version. So there is a pool of money that's roughly aimed in this direction already. Is that fair?
That would be very fair, Chair Reed. There would also be, you know, potential. There are, if I'm understanding correctly, at the moment there are still also some federal energy conservation bonds that are available to the state that have not been utilized at this point in time that may be able to come into play on this also, that once again could only be used for an energy conservation type of opportunity.
And a follow-up, two-part follow-up. So, and again, I guess this is a question to the co-chairs. It would be nice to maybe have the Department of Energy kind of brief us on the collective resources that are available, because it seems like this is just one more in addition to that. I'd like to see the many sources that are available to fund projects like these. And then the next question I had is what I understood here is that these retrofits would take maybe a 10 to 15 year payback, and that there would be loans with 0% interest. Are those loans to the school districts paying back the state at 0% interest? Are those loans to the contractors paying back at 0% interest? Is the state holding the bag on that interest of those loans? Because we all know that debt is a service master on interest, and where would those funds go, and who's taking the brunt on the 0%?
Chair Reed, Chair Bentz, Representative Lindsay, I don't have all the details on that. There's been a number of different ideas and concepts of how to work that, and I think Representative Bailey has returned to the room here.
He has. So, Representative Lindsay, what I might suggest is, as we, I know Representative Smith has been taking copious notes. I suspect Representative Bailey's been monitoring since we know he has the ability to be three places simultaneously. He's probably got all these questions compiled and can follow up and fill in after we hear from our two remaining panelists. So, anyway, Representative Widener.
Real quick, and it may be for the genie sitting in the front row over there that's in all places at one time. But I think one of the things that we need to look at here is we're looking at a 15-year loan program on these. Some of these schools, are they going to be around in 15 years? A lot of them we need to look at seriously if we want to retrofit or if we need to tear them down, so if they become capital. So I don't know, probably would be one of you two addressing that or your thoughts on that.
Co-chairs Reed, co-chair Bentz, Representative Widener. I believe that there's a $2 million leftover funding from the U.S. Department of Energy to do some energy audits on school facilities to help answer that question, to see where the greatest need is, where the greatest bang for the buck is, and also to realistically assess if a school is not likely to be open for another 15 years, then that probably shouldn't be at the front of the line. And I think there's also funding out there for within the ETO territory, but then outside of ETO also, to assess schools all throughout the state to answer that question. And I believe a couple of years ago there was a schools facility task force that was also formed to try and get to the bottom of this issue as well, but was defunded. So unfortunately not all that information is available. But there are efforts to figure that out.
Thank you. So we have two more folks to testify. Thank you all very much for being here. I suspect you'll be back when we consider the amendments and so on. So we have,
Chair.
Please, Representative Byron.
Go ahead. I mean, you can announce your people and then I can ask the question.
Sure. Brandon Adams and Ivan Molesky, please. Representative Byron.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And it isn't really a question. I think it's more of a statement. My district, and I'm assuming, I know in Eugene they've been looking at this, but most districts across the state, I'm guessing, as they look at the resources dwindling, have been looking at their facilities and looking at the buildings that they really need to close because they're just not worth keeping open anymore, partially because of the age of the building and the condition, and partially because the size of the students in that student body in those buildings. So I would guess there's a lot of information out there from the school districts on that question.
That's certainly been true. I know my district has a tiny little piece of the Portland Public School District, and I know they're aware of that same question about which ones should remain and which ones are probably past their useful life and all. Yeah. So it's a good point. Gentlemen.
Go right ahead.
Co-Chair Benz, Co-Chair Reed, distinguished committee members, thank you for my time this afternoon on testifying on such a critical bill. My name is Brandon Adams, and I represent McKinstry. McKinstry's been in the construction business for 50 years and has served Oregon for just over 40 years. We currently employ about 250 staff in Oregon. It's a mix of union craft labor and office staff, engineers, construction managers, et cetera, about 175 union, 75 office. And in Oregon, we added 75 full-time employees this year alone. We work both with public and private entities to design, build, operate, and maintain efficient and sustainable buildings. Big question today is, what is the need to retrofit schools and why schools? Oregon has over 1,200 K-12 schools, all of which have been severely impacted by this economic downturn. Schools struggle to retain teachers and offer core programs while they're spending hundreds of thousands of dollars operating inefficient and deferred systems annually. Since the vast majority of schools do not have sufficient funds on hand, they're forced to defer maintenance and continually direct funds away from the classroom to pay for elevated energy bills. I'd like to address something that was brought up in an earlier testimony. It's been our experience that even new construction, less than 7 years old, does provide a significant amount of opportunity for increased performance and energy efficiency. Reason for that is new buildings are more complex. A lot of times, unless it's a requirement as part of the design-build contract, these buildings do not experience a third-party commissioning after the construction is completed but before occupancy takes place to fine-tune and refine those systems to make sure that they're operating according to design intent. Average Oregon school building age is 40.7 years. So to address the question of, you know, will these schools be around in 15 years, regardless of whether or not they should be still occupied, the reality is that we are short on funds to build new facilities. It's difficult to get bonds passed to provide the funding to build new facilities, and so we need to recognize that we're going to live in these facilities for a long time, making it very important to take care of them. Energy costs are typically a school's second highest expenditure. Personnel is number one. Operations and maintenance budgets are usually cut first during tough economic times. And deferred maintenance leads to higher repair costs down the road and higher energy bills in the meantime. One of the reasons for that is if you're not planning for routine upgrades and prescriptive, predictive, and preventive maintenance programs, then you're caught off guard when your boiler goes down. Typically, Murphy's Law suggests that that's going to be in the middle of the winter, worse temperature conditions, worse weather conditions, and rental boilers are extremely expensive, as an example. Economic impact of school retrofits. School retrofits not only allow reinvestment from those energy savings, those operation cost savings back into the school, but they also stimulate the economy by creating high-paying jobs. Jobs are for carpenters, general laborers, plumbers, pipe fitters, HVAC workers, refrigeration workers, sheet metal vendors, engineers, construction managers, architects, etc. The spectrum is fairly broad. A scalable and sustainable program will create jobs, produce savings immediately over the long term, and such a program should provide schools with upfront capital to undertake these comprehensive upgrades. One of the bottlenecks in moving from audit to implementation, so we recognize that a majority of the schools in the state have had at least one audit, if not two or three, recognizing that the bottleneck is moving from the audit to construction. There's a couple of reasons for that. One is limited expertise on the school district payroll or limited bandwidth of those resources to actually oversee and project manage a project. The other bottleneck is funds. We are fund constrained. There's not enough money out there to do projects. Our general fund competes for operations, capital, and classroom dollars. So typically the default decision, the priority is going to be the classroom investment. I have a couple of case studies here that I would like to just go over a very high level. The handouts actually provide a little bit more detail in backup. And what I'm trying to point out here in this case studies is not only how we can leverage multiple funding sources to pay for capital upgrades and enhance the operations of these facilities, the classroom experience, and also lower the bottom line, but I also want to highlight the comprehensiveness nature of the type of projects that we can undertake under a program like this. And then we also have some jobs creation data there as well for these two projects. The first is Hood River County School District. McKinstry performed a comprehensive energy efficiency retrofit for about 10 buildings district-wide. We performed about 37 energy efficiency projects, including boiler upgrades, controls upgrades, steam traps, brand new HVAC in one building, retro commissioning, high-performance lighting. I'll let you guys look over the field labor and the office labor data, but on that project alone, there was approximately 61 jobs that were employed on those efforts, all the way from evaluation, design, construction, all the subcontractor procurement, and the construction management as well.
And the numbers you're using here are numbers of jobs, or it doesn't, what, I'm wondering what units those
yes.
are?
Yes. Okay. These are not fully loaded FTE, if you will. They are roles that were employed on the projects.
How long on average did those, maybe are going to say that or said somewhere else, how long the project took?
These projects are in the 12 to 18, 24-month range, depending. Both projects had what we call additional phases or contingency projects, and so as we realized construction cost savings on projects, we had other contingency projects that we were able to bring into the scope of work and leverage with the savings, incentives, et cetera.
Thanks.
So really quickly, on the Hood River project, And actually, I'll just stop after I go through the Hood River. Dallas follows a very similar format. But to go over the funding stream for this project, and this is very typical for a typical energy savings performance contract, which is a procurement vehicle that I specialize in at McKinstry. But that's one of many procurement vehicles that we can use to implement these projects. The overall project cost at Hood River was $6.9 million. The K-12 public purpose charge funds that actually contributed to that project, otherwise known as Senate Bill 1149 funds, were roughly $810,000. The ETO incentives that contributed to that project were roughly $114,000. The business energy tax credit pass-through incentives are $230,000. Bonneville Power Administration had $100,000 of incentives because two of the school districts were located in BPA service territory, not Pacific Power service territory. Bond dollars were $2.5 million of the project. And the guaranteed energy savings over a 20-year term was $5.8 million. So what this means ultimately for the district is that we were able to put together a budget package and a project package that was budget neutral over the life of the project. And so we have been successful in offsetting the upfront capital costs with incentives from the utilities and the state. We've been successful in generating significant energy savings, which we provide a performance guarantee on, which has offset their utility bills. And so that delta is covering the debt service payment for this project. There was a question earlier on what kind of loans and financing we pursue to help fund these projects. And there's several tools. We have the State Energy Loan Program, which unfortunately, these days, doesn't provide the most competitive rates, but in the 6-6.5% range for a public sector borrower. We also have qualified school construction bonds and qualified zone academy bonds, which are federal bonds that provide low to no interest rate money for these schools. But the reason why we actually need continued funding is, again, we have very low rates in Oregon. It's very difficult to get a project to pencil financially.
Power rates.
It's very difficult to get a project to pencil financially just on the energy cost savings alone. Our incentives are very valuable, but not quite enough to tip a project over from concept into implementation. And a bill like this will definitely, I think, open up those bottlenecks and grease the skids to more active and fast-track deployment of these projects. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Mr. Molesky.
Chair Reed, Chair Benz, members of the committee, my name is Ivan Molesky. I'm the conservation director of the Oregon chapter of the Sierra Club, the statewide environmental group, and would like to speak in support of this bill, House Bill 2960, today. I wanted to share with you a brief experience. We were advocates 2 years ago of the East Bill that some of you are familiar with, some of you are very much responsible for, and we wanted to tell you a couple stories from that because we believe that shows that there's a lot of success to be had, a lot of win-win situations to be had in energy efficiency and weatherization and job creation. We were one of the projects that came out of that legislation was the Clean Energy Works Portland, which was a 500 home weatherization pilot program. I was on the steering committee of that in the Portland area, and we also worked the Sierra Club directly on a neighborhood scale project to weatherize 100 homes. We worked with the Laborers Union, with community partners at the Metropolitan Alliance for Common Good, religious organizations, and we found that there's incredible demand out in the public right now for finding ways to save energy. And that's across the board. That's average citizens, that's businesses, that's municipalities and school districts. And we found that these jobs or these activities created real jobs. Just in the 100 home pilot project alone, we saw a dozen jobs were created. Many of those are still ongoing because that project, those homes, the weatherization project there started in August. It's continuing through the winter. And so these are businesses, these are private sector companies, that provide lots of training, and so they're actually, you know, they employ dozens themselves, and they're adding another dozen or so folks to help complete these projects. So I wanted to use that as a real-world example that we can actually see real positive activities. Now, other benefits to this bill are that it's going to help create jobs statewide. So, you know, a dozen jobs in John Day or Klamath Falls are going to be very significant, you know, relative to something like that in Portland. And that's I think, a key focus on why you might want to focus on things like schools and other municipal buildings. Reducing energy use ultimately will save money for school districts over time. And while power rates may be low now, they're inevitably going to go up. And so it's important to really plan for the future and plan on ways we can kind of try to reduce those costs over time. So, that allows school districts to stretch limited dollars farther. That's very important. So, importantly, these are private sector jobs helping to create public sector savings. I think that's a key part of this bill. 2 years ago, these efforts were bipartisan. I certainly hope they will be again as we move forward. Thanks for your time. We really appreciate you taking up this legislation and your leadership, Representative Reed.
Thanks, Ivan. Any questions? I feel like it might be about your time, Representative Bailey. Representative Benz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is extremely helpful, and we really appreciate that.
Yeah.
Just a question or two, and these maybe are better left for Representative Bailey, but the bottom line for the Hood River County School District was zero cash flow positive. That meant, though, that the district in some fashion was going to be paying off the 8.3 million dollar loan that's over some span of time into the future.
Mm-hmm.
And that means, is that 20 years generally? What's the...
Yeah, when Co-Chair Benz, Co-Chair Reed, distinguished committee members, great engineering answers, it depends. It depends on our client, what their cost effectiveness criteria is, and what their tolerance is for debt. Our typical projects are a 15 to 20 year debt term. On a comprehensive energy savings retrofit.
Follow up,
please.
Thank you. The debt is then secured by what?
Co-Chair Benz, Co-Chair Reed, would be secured on the school district's assets.
Follow up. The concept then is that the school district, although this shows cash flow positive, doesn't necessarily have a great deal more freed up cash flow because it's using that money to pay off the loan or loans.
Mm-hmm.
And so the analysis that's done is based upon the idea that the schools will continue in business for the 20-year period looking forward. And the other assumption built in is that power rates will always go up.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any other assumptions in your methodology?
Co-Chair Benz, Co-Chair Reed, absolutely. Again, what we're looking at here is trying to find a comprehensive retrofit solution that ultimately is budget neutral for that school district over a term no more typically than the economic life of that equipment. If a district was not willing to make that upfront investment or commitment to the financing and, of course, the project mobilization, then what they would be stuck with is the status quo, which is uncomfortable educational environment, probably a compromised performance on test scores, and higher utility bills, higher bottom line. And so what we're trying to do is essentially shift their operations budget from paying the utility to paying themselves for new equipment and better systems. Hood River County School District and Dallas School District present very favorable situations where actually we were able to exceed the budget neutral target and generate a cash flow positive project for the district, which means that they're actually generating positive dollars to their bottom line. They're more than covering the debt service payment with those utility cost savings starting very on early on the project. I believe both these projects turned cash flow positive in year two.
Thank you for that, although I was asking for assumptions. And so I was looking for things like, yeah, the school will stay in business, the kids won't suddenly not be in Hood River, those kinds of assumptions that go into looking forward 20 years. That's what I was asking for.
Yes, Co-Chair Benz, Co-Chair Reed, my apologies for missing the mark on that one. Yes, I think the assumption is that the schools are not going anywhere. The school district will be there for another 100 years, if you will, and then recognizing that it's very difficult to get a bond pass that will pay for brand new facilities. They're making the choice to invest in their existing facilities. So yes, you know, the primary assumption there is that those facilities will be occupied well beyond the debt service.
One final question.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the model also includes repairing the equipment if the boiler blows up. There's something in there so that suddenly there isn't some very large bill that wasn't anticipated resulting from whatever has been done by virtue of this investment. Is that another one of those assumptions, or is it somehow addressed?
We try to address that. Excuse me, Co-Chair Benz, Co-Chair Reed, distinguished committee members. We look at ourselves as partners with our clients, and what we want to do is mitigate as much risk to them as much risk to us in pursuing this project together. And so in our evaluation, we're making sure to do our diligence to look deep and far into their systems to evaluate what the best choice for investing in those systems and upgrades is. Obviously, we would not want to put, you know, a very expensive $300,000 or $400,000 control system on top of a boiler or chiller system that's antiquated and you know, potentially will fail within a couple of years. And so we try to evaluate those risks. We're transparent about communicating those risks to the client, and then we work together on developing a scope and budget and ultimate project that we move forward with.
Thank you.
If I could follow up really quickly on that, too. In addition to that, we have some safeguards built into our process that provide performance validation associated with our energy guarantees. And so we measure and verify our projects and prove out the savings through real-time live monitoring and data collection. As part of that, we are typically procuring additional remote operation services or embedding them into the original construction scope of work, where we are providing remote operations and facility management services for at least 1 year of warranty after the project is closed out. That covers the district again if something goes bump in the night that we didn't forecast.
Representative Wyden.
Thank you, Chair. One of the things I'd like to have and I'd like to see, I mean, right here you're showing us three shining examples, but I would like to have all the districts that you've done work for and other people have done work for, because I've heard the horror stories of some of these projects as well, and school districts that have paid a lot of money and are having a lot of issues with this work that was done and the systems that were put in. So it'd just be nice to follow up with them just to see the results, because I've done a lot of sales for products, and I always bring in the ones that are the shining examples and the stars of how great it is, but I would like to see all of them so we can communicate with them and just ask them how the project went, if that would be.
And perhaps another possible way of following up on that question, which is a good one, maybe you could say something about or summarize some of the lessons you might have learned from projects that didn't go as you might have wished.
Yes, absolutely. Co-Chair Reed, Co-Chair Benz, committee members, I would be happy to pull together a comprehensive summary of our energy savings performance contracts that we procured in Oregon over the last 10 years, and I think that information will be valuable for you. We'll also include contact information of the school district representatives that we're working with on those projects. Some of the lessons learned that I have picked up on over my 10 years in this industry, and I'll add a little footnote to my experience. I spent 7.5 years working at the Oregon Department of Energy. I used to run the school's programs, including the K-12 public purpose charge program for Oregon, and in full disclosure, the energy savings performance contracting procurement process for Oregon as well. My experience has been, if I'm going to hit on one major risk factor post-construction that compromises savings and performance, is on the operations side. So any program that we put into play, I would hope that we're being very realistic with ourselves about why we have the amount of opportunity that we do through conservation. We have this great investment opportunity, which is financially viable and oftentimes provides a very favorable net present value on the investment because of all this deferred maintenance. With limited maintenance budgets in K-12, a lot of stuff gets deferred until it fails. And so because of that and the inefficiencies, we have a great financial situation to leverage the capital cost of these upgrade investments with those utility savings. After that investment is made, we need to take care of that investment through endurance protocols that are built into the program. And so we need to have monitor-based commissioning, retro-commissioning, and provisions that provide enhanced funding for operations and maintenance, perhaps a shared savings tool where the districts can keep some of those savings and fund a pool, a rainy day fund, if you will, for operations and maintenance. One of the key lessons that I've learned and where we identify a challenge and a risk factor for projects of ours that haven't gone as well as the two highlighted in this case study here is on the operations side. And so recognizing that these are, you know, at some point the project is closed out, our performance validation is complete, projects are commissioned, and the owner now is in charge of operating their systems. And we need to do a better job of communicating our owners, training the owners, and maybe even providing them with additional resources besides just staff and training to keep up to date with technologies and programs, as well as resource conservation management activities. But I would say that's where, you know, savings a lot of times drifts or falls apart is on the operations side at the school. And again, that's a limited resource issue at the school district level.
Thank you very much. Any other questions? So it looks like we're back to Representative Smith and Representative Bailey to wrap up. It's a nice bit of symmetry here as we've kind of been introduced, talked about some of the concepts, and you know, maybe some more of the technical and some of the things we've uncovered as questions and uncertainties. Representative Smith, you're going to get us started.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. For the record, Representative Jefferson Smith, representing District 47. I'll start with some of the questions, and then Representative Bailey can correct what I get wrong, and if the panel has additional questions, fire away.
Be sure to leave him some time. Okay.
Say, yeah. we're going to four. The first question of sort of why schools, Chair Bentz, Representative Bentz, some of this conversation, at least with some of the people here, started with public buildings more generally. And there was some good input last session and in the interim that saving public money offers a big advantage over time, but that schools offered a particular advantage. I'd be game personally in going broader. I think a lot of people would, but schools offer a few particular advantages. One is, and it's not just that it's much of our older building stock, but it's also that we know that healthier environments are particularly relevant for school children who are more susceptible to air issues and environmental issues in their schools, and that schools are the building other than their home that they spend the most time in. Courthouses are more ephemeral. A lot of public buildings for a lot of occupants other than the employees who work in there every day, people's presence there is a little more brief. And we can have a conversation about retrofitting prisons another day. Also, we have the advantage of higher performing learners, up to 20 to 25% faster progress on preparing for exams, and a 5% increase in performance on exams. Better light, better air matters. It helps learning environments, and it reduces lost school days. Also, an educational function. If you mix this with a school helping students learn how to save energy, that'll help a lot over time. So I agree that we should go beyond schools, but this is a good start. A cocktail napkin estimate suggests, and we're trying to get more exact numbers, that Oregon Public Schools spend $500 to $700 million, maybe more, on energy and fuel costs in a calendar year. So imagine a good retrofit is able to save, you know, let's say a really good retrofit saves 25% of that money. That's $100 to $150 million every year. Now, we're not going to be able to use all that for leverage. I offer that kind of for theoretical understanding. But imagine $150 saved revenue stream and the leverage that could provide, right, is a significant opportunity over time. So that's some on why schools. Some thoughts on financing, and Representative Bailey can offer more or less. To be clear, some projects will indeed pay for themselves within 5 years, but it'll be up to school districts to decide whether they want to limit the work in their schools to those projects, or they want to bundle energy projects with other projects like seismic, et cetera, and including bigger projects that won't pay for themselves. That probably won't be the ambit or determination of bill proponents or this legislature, but will be school district and planning decisions. Some of the elements include Article 11 P bonds. We've had suggestions about Article 11 J bonds. I was going to make that response, Representative Widener. Representative Widener, while you're here, it might be nice to have to access revolving loan fund, which was used with East and with projects that funded water projects for agriculture throughout the West some years ago. In terms of some process, J.P. Botmal at the Department of Energy is working on other funding mechanisms that could help get things started this summer. And so we can get some work done right away. To be clear, we probably don't need, not every project needs a 0% loan. To give the example that was offered one of our first panels, when Portland Public Schools spent their $11 million, that was 45% subsidized loan, so it wasn't free money, it was cheaper money. And they were able to commit to do that work and get started. I think the turnaround time from offer to acceptance was 30 days, right? They were able to do that very quickly. So not every school would be, we understand that not every school would be ready to react instantly, but my guess is there would be many more schools and many more school districts that would be ready to jump at whatever meager thing we could get started with. Representative Lindsay, you asked a question about which schools. A partial simple answer is the ones that are ready. Part of the discussion is having a set of criteria that includes geographic breadth and other factors in the early rounds. There is a school task force that was developed to identify and evaluate the building stock. Due to funding issues, it is not going to be able to provide a full answer anytime right away. But the good news is already we have a large set, again, far more available projects than we will have the capacity to accomplish in the near term. I'll give my personal answer, and I can't speak for the other, although I think I might be channeling at least one of them. I can't speak for the rest of the co-sponsors, for other people who've been working on this, or for the governor, but eventually all of them, right? At least all of the ones we don't need to tear down, right? And one question is, does it make more sense? And this isn't a legislative decision. This should be a school district decision. But is this the kind of school building that needs to stick around and get improved, or is this the kind of school building that should be torn down and rebuild? But again, that won't be the ambit of this bill. What we want to try to do is provide some tools so school districts are better able to make those kinds of decisions. That sort of pivots to your expansion versus retrofit question. A lot of our school stock is already built, right? So I went to Grant High School, and Grant High School is a really neat building, has a lot of elements to it that I imagine are going to last for a long time. Tearing down Grant High School and trying to rebuild another one, you know, doesn't make a heck of a lot of sense. So retrofits are a reality whether we like them or not. In terms of expansion, again, this shouldn't limit that. The good news is a lot of energy efficiency can be accomplished merely by applying more modern code. Right, so it's hard to say to Grant High School, hey, please apply the current modern building standards, right, to your building that you built 100 years ago or whenever it was built. But it's easier to do at a school, including some of the schools near your district. I don't know if you're, you know, Southview, Westridge, Westview, Southridge, but if those touch your district, the more modern stock. It's actually only two schools, but I like the name.
Is Southview and Westridge?
Yeah, I think it's funny to call them those things. Okay. I also see Southridge and Westview, but I just
thank
think
you.
It's funny.
Thank you. Just checking.
Thanks. A little bit about process. Representative Bailey and the governor's office and others have been convening lots of conversation over the interim with people in business, schools community, labor community, the treasurer's office, public health people, and more, getting input from people who had served on, for instance, the schools facilities task force. The governor's office convened a transition team. Some of the members have been here today. I don't know if they're still there. Oh, yeah, they're there. Some of the co-sponsors of the Efficient Public Buildings work last session that had some bipartisan support, people who worked on the East Bill, which originated some of these important concepts. And then the last couple things I want to say, still work to do. Had I spoken at the beginning rather than towards the end, the primary point I would have made, and I'll make it now, is that this is not merely the decision, in my judgment, for this legislative session. I think we need to do something this legislative session. But if we're going to have school buildings that have healthier students and higher performing learners and that aren't spending hundreds of millions of dollars more than we need to be, it's going to be a multi-year effort that's going to require more than any single political party, more than any single governor, more than any set of legislators, and giving, as they say, and I've said before and I'll say again, they say the most important thing to do when building a ship is giving a love for the sea, and I think the primary thing that I want to offer is that we start building that common commitment. And beyond that, I can answer questions, but I'll turn it over to Representative Bailey, who can add or subtract what I said.
I guess if you really loved the sea, you wouldn't want the boat. You'd just swim, right?
You can't stay in the sea for that long. If you really love the sea, you need a boat. We can talk about that. That's a different bill I've got that we can talk about.
I hope it comes to this committee. Senator Bailey.
Thank you, Co-Chair Reed, Co-Chair Bentz, members of the committee. There is nothing to correct in what Representative Smith said. He said it very eloquently. I might add a few other thoughts around some of the details of the financing. And really, this financing gets to the heart of market creation and sort of under the principle of you might build a boat if you want to sell it to somebody who loves the sea and wants to cross it and go to China and trade. And start to develop those kinds of markets of how do we start to invest capital into our public buildings and into our private buildings. Let me emphasize that there is no risk to the general fund, there is no cost to the general fund, and there is no impact on the state's credit rating. And to some of the questions that came up earlier around what sort of programs do we have out there now, what are the list of the programs, and why aren't we using existing programs? What this proposal does, as currently envisioned, in the amendment that you will hopefully have in front of you very shortly, and what I understand to be the current consensus around the financing mechanism, is take existing programs that are less effective working separately and combine them together so that they're more effective working together. And that's really what this bill is about. So you have essentially two kinds of money. You have one-time dollars, and then you have loan dollars that get repaid. So you can think of sort of broadly as grants and loans. The way the financing structure for this bill would work is we have an existing loan program, the small-scale energy loan program that many people who have come up today have talked about, that because it is backed by its own reserve fund, and the way that it's structured, it does not impact the state's credit ratings. We're not loaning dollars that put the state's general fund at risk. It is a self-solvent program, and we have that on record from the Treasurer's office. Those loans have gone out consistently for energy projects, and we want to take advantage of that loan mechanism that we have. You heard one of the other people who was testifying, I believe it was the representative from McKinstry, talk about the interest rate on those loans as being a little bit high and not all that competitive. And so the theory in bringing down that interest rate is it helps these projects pencil in a shorter time frame to address some of those payback issues and to make it more attractive for schools. So where the 0% comes from is a combination between that loan program and then these existing one-time dollars that we are already paying for and already directing towards schools out of the Senate Bill 1149 schools dollars that come from the public purpose charge, which now comes in these sort of annualized chunks. And as some districts have already done, what we're looking at doing is taking that stream of dollars out of that fund and bringing it back into present day. So bringing it up front and then using that to make the cost of that loan lower. So that interest is not being borne by the state or by the people of Oregon. It's being borne by an existing revenue stream for energy efficiency that is currently being utilized but isn't being utilized in a way that's as transformational for these projects as it could be if combined with that loan. And obviously those dollars, because they're $1149 dollars, can only be used in investor-owned utility territory. So that's why we're bringing in some other kinds of money to both supplement that in investor-owned utility territory and also make it viable in consumer-owned utility territory, such as the QECB money that we have left over from the federal government. There are some existing lottery dollars that were already allocated in the last biennium under the Energy Efficiency and Sustainable Technology Loan Program that were dedicated towards commercial retrofits that could be available to be used for this program theoretically. So taking those dollars and using them in combination and then giving school districts a choice, you can either A, if you want to go deeper, if you want to do a more extensive retrofit, an upgrade of your facilities, you can take out this low-cost or no-cost loan and then pay that back over time through utility mechanism or through some other mechanism. Or B, if you choose to, you can say, we'd rather not incur the debt in our balance sheet to pay back this loan over time. We'd rather take the cash grant up front. It'll be a lesser amount because we only have so many one-time dollars to go around. Those one-time dollars leverage the loan dollars. So if you're taking money, it's sort of, if you're taking money out of the leverage dollars, you're going to get less out of it because we need those dollars to leverage the loan dollars.
Representative Bailey, I'm going to just stop right there just because, as Representative Benz often anticipates, Representative Greenlick is probably lurking outside, and I know there are a couple of questions. So if you have just a minute more maybe to sum up, and then another couple of questions for you.
Great. So that's the financing mechanism a little bit in a nutshell, although we're still kind of getting some of the details right. I just want to speak very briefly to a point that Representative Smith made that's very important that I just want to draw out and repeat. You can sort of think of this pilot program towards schools as going towards the Goldilocks schools, right? Like, it's not too hot and it's not too cold. It's right in the middle. If you have a building that doesn't need much of an upgrade, just needs a little bit of an upgrade, and a lot of it's been done already, you might not get enough savings off of it to really make it worth your while with the financing mechanism that you have. If you have a building that needs a lot of work done to it, you might be better off building a new school. There's kind of a threshold point there. And what this program in the pilot phase with the dollars that we have is going to go towards that Goldilocks middle. And the more sources of funding and the more kinds of options that we have over time, you can build out sort of on those edges, although it's not exactly even on both sides. So I'll pause there.
Thank you. Representative Nathanson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In 2005, there was a bill that passed the legislature regarding seismic needs assessment, because there were a lot of public buildings that needed to be upgraded due to seismic risk. And in 2007, there was a report on the needs assessment. And the reason I'm asking about it is there's a special emphasis on K through 12 schools. And I'm wondering how you may have already coordinated with what the Office of Emergency Management is doing and the Quake Safe Schools program that grants are going for already. Is there a way to sort of capitalize and it might be to the district's benefit as well as to everybody's benefit to do some of these things in conjunction, the energy conservation with the seismic upgrade, if that can be coordinated. Is this something that's anticipated?
Co-Chair Reed, Co-Chair Benz, Representative Nathanson, I believe you're also referring to the fact that the Treasurer's Office, I believe, and I can be corrected if I'm wrong, has already gone out for the sale of 11 M&N bonds around seismic upgrades in schools, and that work is going forward, and we're certainly in discussions with them and coordinating.
This is about coordinating the projects, not just to make sure the financing is similar.
So thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Nathanson. As a takeaway, I think that we can provide sort of our most robust answer to what coordination looks like. I think some of this is going to happen at the district level, right? But if there are things the state can do to help be smart, that's great. Part of the comment about school districts choosing whether they want to bundle an energy efficiency project with another set of projects is because they'll have, and it's not just limited to those things, but that's besides one of the most obvious. So my own hunch is that my own strong feeling is that doing a more robust energy efficiency program like this will help facilitate seismic projects because they can help capture savings, do a bunch of work at once, and some of it is paid for by the revenue it generates through savings. But we should do more on that.
Thank you.
Representative Lindsay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In short, this is a new government program that will cost the taxpayers money. How much money are we talking?
Chair Reed, Chair Benz, Representative Lindsay, with all due respect, that's not correct. It is a combination of existing programs that does not cost the taxpayers any money.
Okay, and follow-up question.
Please.
So I got parents screaming at me in my district saying that we're cutting school days, making classrooms bigger, all those fun things that you probably hear as well. What would you tell the parents if I went back and said, if you were me, and you look like me a little bit, if you were to go back and say, hey, look, we're going to do retrofitting instead of retrofitting at the expense of cutting class days, increasing school rooms.
Chair Reed, Chair Vance, Representative Lindsay, the beautiful part about this is that the dollars that we are accessing to use in these schools for this program are dollars that can only be used for efficiency upgrades in schools. It is a separate set of revenue from the revenue that we use in the general fund and that local districts use to pay for classrooms. And so we can, without impacting that funding, make school children able to learn in a setting that is better for them, that studies show increases their performance and is a nicer place for teachers and students to be.
And maybe this is the time to initiate that exchange program among representatives, since you're already being confused for each other.
One follow-up.
Yep.
Based on my calculations, the governor's proposed budget for K through 12 funding, there will be approximately 5% decrease from the last biennium. I understand that this is a separate source of funding, but I'll tell you, I'm going to get parents yelling at me. Why don't we slip that money to the general fund, so we don't have that 5% decrease?
Chair Reed, Chair Vance, Representative Lindsay, although sometimes it can be difficult to explain the intricacies of finances to all the folks that show up at our town halls, it would, I think, in short, be unwise for the state to think about loaning energy efficiency money to the general fund to pay for schools and then pay that back. We did some loans in 2003, and I think we're going to be able to avoid that in this biennium and be able to move forward with a balanced budget.
Representative Widener, clock is ticking.
Yes, real quick. Have either one of you or anybody in the room done any investigation on how many of these furnaces are oil, natural gas, biomass? Because I keep hearing electricity thrown out there, and I don't know of too many schools that are running on electric heat. Most of them are running on oil, gas, or now biomass is the new one. So.
Yeah, Representative Reed, Chair Reed, Representative Widener, in the amendments before you, I think you'll see adding biomass to the slate of activities. I try to be relatively careful not to say electricity, but try to say energy, because it's not, you know, I think in Portland Public Schools, I think it's 350, excuse me, I think it's 3-point-something million on electricity and about 4 million on oil, natural gas, and other fuels. I think that's right for Portland Public Schools. I don't know every school district. We can try to get that answer, but you're right that it's not just electricity.
Thank you very much. Appreciate the testimony. Certainly just the beginning of what's to come on
good bill should pass.
Appreciate that. And anything else to come before the committee? Close the public hearing, House Bill 2960, and adjourn the committee. Thank you very much.